beautiful melody to bring us into our next guest. It's always the time of our life. And we get to talk to Charles.
Oh, yeah.
Send in your Wake and Rakes as well before we get him on the line. My success rate, my streak is over because the Wild blew it with a minute left, but then won in overtime. That game was unhinged. There's a fight every 10 seconds, but Justin said yesterday, if the Colorado Avalanche did not win on the puck line, then...
What did I say?
I don't know. You said you were quitting the show or something. I don't remember.
Okay.
Stuff.
I'm done then.
Well, maybe we can find a way.
Four unanswered for the Ducks. Are you in Colorado? What are we doing here?
There's something going on. We'll talk about that later. But while we're on the air, you can send them in at 590-590. Our favorite guest, Charles Davis, NFL on CBS. How are you this morning, Charles? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Good morning to the both of you. And, you know, my son last night was at the Capitals Penguins game.
Oh, that's a good one.
And he was fired up. Yeah, he was fired up going in, and then you get there and you end up in a shootout. So the kid knows how to do it right. I got to give it to him.
Those are a hot
There's
ticket
no
item,
doubt
Charles.
About it.
You get to see two of the best go head to head.
And you know how much those two really like each other. So, I mean, you put it all together. I mean, the term that the Caps fans have for the city of Pittsburgh is not one we can use on radio. And Pittsburgh has the same contempt for the Caps and their people. So it makes it feels like an old-time rivalry, even now, where you don't feel like everybody just, you know, can't stand each other, that sort of a deal, you know, where they all kind of get along and how you doing, what's happening. You just sense it. These two, oh, no. They get to the rink and they don't even want to look at each other until the puck is dropped.
Maybe that old school rivalry is a part of the same rivalry that we're seeing between the Bengals and the Chiefs. Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, a head-to-head of two quarterbacks looking to cement their legacy. It seems like they both have a lot on the line, of course, with the championship. But in terms of Patrick Mahomes proving that he could do it with or without an injury, Joe Burrow with the maybe has the Kansas City Chiefs number and he could cement himself in that conversation for one of the best quarterbacks that we've seen, being able to take down the giant Patrick Mahomes once again. Is this the most intriguing aspect of the weekend for you, the head-to-head against these two young studs?
It is, and the way you framed it, Ailish, about this rivalry that's developing, and it's developing right in front of our eyes. And one of the terms that I feel like we've overused over the last 4 or 5 years is the term organic. I feel like I remember at one point I said to myself, how come every conversation I have with a different person, someone uses the word organic, and they work organic in there? And so, but in this time, I think it's appropriate, it's apt. These two, the schedule worked out. They got good at the same. They were good at the same time. They played big time games that went down to the stretch. Cincinnati has beaten Kansas City twice in Cincinnati in the regular season. Then you throw in last year's AFC Championship game where Kansas City was putting the boots to them, and Cincinnati reeled them in the second half. Kansas City got off the gas, and Patrick Mahomes, admittedly, said this was my worst game and I'm the cause of this. Now he's not 100%, but his point was I played not to lose instead of playing to win, but give Cincinnati credit for coming back and getting them. Now both of these teams are extremely respectful of each other. You hear Burrow saying Kansas City's still the team to beat. You don't hear Kansas City with a lot of trash talk. Although Orlando Brown, I think he felt like he needed to elevate things a little bit. Hey, we'll play you in a CVS parking lot. We'll play anyone in a CVS parking lot. But I don't think he was trying to jump out there. But there's always one outlier, right, guys? And it's Eli Apple for Cincinnati. The messages that he sent to Buffalo afterwards, some of them viewed as disrespectful, and he had to come back and apologize somewhat for them, but still told them to enjoy Cancun because you're on vacation. This is the type of thing that stirs it up. But more than anything, they play tight, close games that go down to the wire. And they're teams that we enjoy watching play. And that's what makes this type of a rivalry right now. And you're right. Mahomes, injured ankle or not, is sick and tired of hearing about Cincinnati being 3-0 and Burrow 3-0 against him. And then I think Cincinnati threw in the fact that they're calling the stadium Burrowhead Stadium instead of Arrowhead. So, yeah, we're going to have some fun come Sunday.
So very possible that Eli Apple's doing too much, not necessarily the most dominant defensive back going. And I'm sure that his name has come up in discussions between Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. So they have something special for Eli, you think, this weekend?
I think that they would like to, but someone's going to have to do it. You remember last year, Justin, that Eli Apple talked a ton of trash in the run-up to the Super Bowl. One is, you know, he's one of our media, and I'm using Joey Tribbiani air quotes here, darlings heading into the game about locking people down and this, that, and everything. And who got beat for the game-winning touchdown? By Cooper Kupp? Eli Apple. Who got beat on the last couple of drives to get the Rams the win? Eli Apple. So you're right about it. He's not a dominant corner. He's played better in Cincinnati than he's played anywhere else in his career. But that still doesn't make him a Pro Bowl type of a corner. But he likes to talk. He likes to be brash. He likes to be out there. And he's benefited from being on a good team. And he's had stretches where he's played fairly well. But my point about Kansas City, they can talk about him all they want. But who is the wide receiver that they have that's going to make him pay? Okay, that's the question. Because Travis Kelce caught 14 passes against Jacksonville, which is still stunning because every defensive team in the league that plays Kansas City, number 87, is really wide receiver one on your scouting report. He caught 14 balls, two touchdowns, 98 yards. Let's say Cincinnati goes, okay, we're not letting 87 do it. It'll be a combination of Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt at linebacker, Von Bell, Jesse Bates at safety. They'll bring in probably Dax Hill or Trey Flowers if he's healthy as a third corner towards him. They will run a combination of coverages. So let's say that they start to limit his production somehow. Who is the person out wide that's going to make you pay? Is it Marquez Valdes-Scantling? He's as liable to drop it as he is to catch it. Sky Moore is a rookie. Kadarius Toney, he's another brash guy that the production is – the potential is bigger than the production so far. Juju Smith-Schuster, do you stay awake at night defending Juju Smith-Schuster anymore? That's what's got to happen in this ballgame for Kansas City. So Eli Apple may get away with being as brash as he wants to be without getting challenged by a great wide receiver, although Valdes-Scantling can run by you, and if he does catch the ball, that's a bad day for you.
And maybe this leads into your answer for this next question, but is there a clear mismatch or an advantage anywhere on the field for either of these teams?
As crazy as it sounds, if Cincinnati runs the ball the way they did against Buffalo, Ailish, that's the mismatch. Because Ted Karras at center, Cordell Volson, the rookie guard who's playing better, and he's much better moving forward than he is pass protecting. Whether it's Alex Kapp or Max Sharping at guard, they go against what I call the triangle, all right? It has to be a Bermuda's triangle for Kansas City, and that's not really their nature. And that's Derek Nnadi at defensive tackle, Chris Jones defensive tackle, Nick Bolton at linebacker. Bolton makes a ton of tackles, terrific player. Chris Jones, we know, is a wonderful player inside, especially when he's rushing the passer. Nnadi's supposed to be more of a run defender. But if Cincinnati runs it as well inside as they did against Buffalo, then Kansas City's got a problem because the Chiefs are built to play with a 14-0 lead. They're built like Peyton Manning's Indianapolis Colts were with Freeney and Mathis. 14-0 lead, go get the quarterback, that's your strength. But as we saw against Buffalo, Buffalo never had really a chance to mount a pass rush because here comes Joe Mixon at them all the time and just beat them up all game. And so that was a problem for them. If Kansas City's playing like that, they have a problem. If Kansas City gets out to the lead they got out to last year, I don't expect Mahomes to get off the gas, and I think that he's going to be playing well enough that, you know, the ankle, yeah, it's going to be a problem, but I'm not sure it'll be definitive in this game. Let's just wait and see. But if they get out to a lead, I just don't see them tucking tail like they did last year and bring their neck in like a turtle and trying to ride it out. They know better with Burrow on the other side, but to me, that's where it could be. Yeah, we talk about Cincinnati's offensive line and who's out and this, that. But the way they played against Buffalo, running the ball, the mismatch was actually on that side. Can they turn it into that again this time?
So is that kind of a key for Cincinnati? Like, we've been kind of like, what's the secret sauce with them? Like, why, how have they figured out how to, you know, take maybe a defensive unit that doesn't have that many big names and a banged up offensive O-line? Like, how do they continue to maybe exceed expectations? And it could be after beating the Chiefs 3 times by 3 points in each game. It's just that what they do is more catered toward a close game. Well, you mentioned Kansas City. Hey, how's that defense built? It's built to go get the quarterback when you're leading ball games by 14 points. Is the difference between these two teams maybe that inevitably they're going to play a close game, and what Cincinnati does better in close games, or what Cincinnati does best, is deliver in close games and do things more in line with late game, one possession football?
Yeah, I think that, and Justin, I love where you're headed on that. I think Cincinnati offensively feels like they can play whatever styles necessary for that particular ball game. I remember Joe Burrow telling us last year in a meeting with him before a game, and he wasn't being obnoxious, but it was, you know, he kind of went third person with us. What's that? We were like, what style do you need to be in this ball game or whatever? And he's like, I don't know. We'll find out. But Joe Burrow is going to be whatever style he needs to be to win the game that Sunday. And that's what he was. Do we need to throw it more? Do we need to run it more? Do we need all of that? And Cincinnati feels that they can do that with the run game, with the pass game. Hayden Hurst continues to develop as a receiver, so they can throw to the tight end. They can throw to the running back. They feel like they can do that. Defensively, they feel like they are built that they can morph into whatever you need. Do we need to blitz? Do we need to play coverage? Do we need to do whatever? Their numbers, Justin, as you know, will not jump off the page at you where you go, wow, that's a dominant defense. But in ball games, as you pointed out, that they're tight and close, they don't make the big mistake. They don't give up the big play. They, you know, you don't rip off the chunk play at a key time against them. They make you earn it all the way down, and eventually, most of the time, you make the mistake. So that's why Cincinnati feels very comfortable in these close ball games. Kansas City doesn't want to feel like they're a team that can't win close ball games. They do win them, all right? They have won them. But Cincinnati, quote-unquote, had their number in terms of that. Think about the 3 games they've played. The 2 in Cincinnati, late in the ball game, both big plays by Burrow throwing it out wide to Ja'Marr Chase to help break open the ball game. Those are the things that you have to be conscious of and be careful, because remember, Kansas City, they are a pressure team. When push comes to shove, Steve Spagnuolo is going to bring an extra guy at the quarterback and blitz, and you got to hold up in man coverage. And that's where the key is. Remember, Kansas City's corners, all young this year, 3 rookies back there that play a lot.
If you can do it any which way, you're never caught out, right? You're never exposed. You're never vulnerable. And that might not be the difference between Cincy and Kansas City, but it might have been the difference between Kansas City and Buffalo. So we'll see, what happens here with the Bengals and Chiefs in the AFC title game. But moving to the NFC, handling Philly in Philly, the toughest test yet here for Brock Purdy, is it not?
Absolutely. No question about it. One quick thing, Justin, before we move on. Cincinnati deserved to win last Sunday. They were the better football team in that game. No ifs, ands, or buts. They were surgical. They were clinical. I said it was about the most surgical hit I've seen all season long in terms of how they played the game, every phase. But let's not, you know, and Buffalo, you won't hear it from them, nor should you, and that just shows the class that they have, and everyone recognizes it. From the moment DeMar Hamlin fell on that field in Cincinnati, what Buffalo has been dealing with, carrying burden, if you want to call it that, but much more love and trying doing all the right things for him, it is an extra load that is a hard load to carry. I don't care what team you're on. I've said it before and I'll say it here now. Buffalo would not change a thing in how they've embraced, done, what they need, et cetera. But when all of us walk into your locker room every day, and no matter what you say, we turn it into a DeMar Hamlin question, it just increases it. It's more you're carrying with you. And they look like a team Sunday that was emotionally drained. Like they didn't have much left to give. Like they tried to mash the gas and it just wasn't there. It's not an excuse, taking nothing from Cincinnati, but that wasn't the full Buffalo that you're normally going to get. And circumstances, I think, put them there much more than anything else. And I feel for them But again, they wouldn't change a thing because all they care about is DeMar Hamlin, and rightly so. But that really worked against them last Sunday, I thought. I've seen this before where teams have had tragedy around them and had tough circumstances. You can carry it for a while, but you can't carry it the distance. And it caught up to Buffalo. Now, moving to Philadelphia, Brock Purdy? Absolutely, because now Brock Purdy, if San Francisco doesn't run the ball well early, Justin, right? If Christian McCaffrey, if Elijah Mitchell, if they don't get off running the football, if Deebo Samuel isn't a big part of that, and you're into a lot of third down situations, can Brock Purdy convert on those third downs? That's where Philadelphia wants to get this game. Okay, kid, they've played around you. We want you to play. We want to play through you. We want them to play through you now, meaning on third down, you've got to hit all your throws. You've got to hit 50%, 45% on third down to keep those sticks moving, keep your team in the ball game. We want to put the ball in your hands, all the pressure on you, and see if George Kittle's going to make a miracle catch all the time. That's how they want to play this ball game. So, Ndamukong Suh, Linval Joseph signed in midseason. They could be more prominent trying to slow down the run game of San Francisco, working inside with Javon Hargrove and Fletcher Cox. Because if they can get going and now turn loose the best pass rush in the league, Justin, that's what they're wanting to get this game to, and see if this young rookie, Mr. Irrelevant, can stay relevant and hit the throws he needs to hit.
How perfect does the Niners defense need to be to win this game, especially early coming out, as we mentioned, on the road in Philly against Jalen Hurts and co, with Brock Purdy never being in the spotlight? Do they have to be, you know, basically the best that they've ever been?
Yeah, they need to be better than Philadelphia's defense, which is something you'll hear teams talk about all the time. The units that don't play against each other, Ailish, sometimes that unit needs to be better than the unit that maybe people think is a little bit better than yours. Now, I don't know that people think that Philly's defense is better than San Francisco's. They're better rushing the passer by numbers, but San Francisco's defensive numbers are pretty darn good across the board. And they're going to have the defensive player of the year, Nick Bosa, although Philadelphia is saying, hold a second, Hassan Reddick should have been up for that award as well. So they'll burn in terms of that. But looking at it, San Francisco is going to say, as you pointed out, we need to take care of our young quarterback. We are tremendous in the second half. We need to be that in the first half as well. So the way I see this game going for them, Philadelphia's modus operandi is to throw the football early and come back and beat you up in the run game. That's what they've tried to do most of this year. Game plan is Hurts throwing it out to A.J. Brown, throwing it out to Devontae Smith, throwing it to Dallas Goedert, swinging it to Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Kenneth Gainwell, and then coming back. And as the game goes on, wear on you in the run game, what they did against the Giants and beat you up for 268. If San Francisco can hold down the run game early and keep their great linebacking trio clean, Fred Warner, Azeez Alshire, and Dre Greenlaw, if they do that and they run and make plays in the run game that way close to the line of scrimmage, oh, we got a heck of a game on our hands then. There's no doubt. Because remember, Philadelphia has the best offensive line in football. And Lane Johnson got through the last game and played fairly well, even with a horrific injury. This could be a heck of a lot of fun because it's might versus might. But if they can keep Bosa from being active in rushing the passer, Eric Armstead, Philadelphia will feel like they have the advantage. But I do think they're going to want to throw it before they try and run it.
268 yards on the ground for the Eagles in their win over the Giants. It was really, they were unstoppable on the ground using all three backs, as you mentioned, and they didn't even have to use Jalen Hurts that much. But that option, I think, will be there. But it might have to be another game throwing the ball, because if there is a weakness in that 49ers defense, it might be the secondary. Has Jalen Hurts checked off all the boxes for you when returning from injury? Clearly, they haven't unleashed him the same way as a runner, but throwing the football downfield, it looks like it's all good on that end?
Yeah, I think all that looks fine. He's not 100%. He's pretty much admitting it to everyone, but he's good enough and fine enough that he can do all of those things. And as you pointed out, they're able to keep him from having to run the football. This game might be different. It's all out to try and get to the Super Bowl, and you get 2 weeks break. So I don't think they're going to – Shane Steichen, their offense coordinator, is not going to take those plays out of the playbook this week. They will be up and ready to go. But most of the time when they run the ball with Jalen Hurts, they're protected runs. They will pull a guard in front of him. They will have an escort with a back or a tight end. Typically, when you see him, it's not a naked run where he's faking it and going out on his own. He's got someone with him. And the hit he took from in Chicago that hurt his shoulder came from the backside at the end of a run. You can't protect 100%, but they're going to do their best to try and get it done. He's had a phenomenal year. He's got to do it one more time. And that secondary of San Francisco, as you pointed out, they got Tre'Davious Ward from Kansas City to be cornerback one. I think the strength of their secondary is still in their safeties. Jimmy Ward, the veteran, and Talanoa Hufanga, who's a Pro Bowler this year, all-pro player, had a monster year. All the Troy Polamalu comparisons, because Troy is his mentor. You know, of course, he is Samoan or Tongan, similar to Troy. All of those things kick into play, as well as style.
Mm-hmm.
He's the type of player who can make a play downfield and help turn the tide with a big hit or an interception or a cause fumble. They've got to keep their eyes on him.
All right, Charles, last one for you before I let you go. If you're looking at the Eagles and their schedule to this point, I think we could agree it was relatively easier compared to the Niners, probably the best team that they've played all year. Less adversity, to get to the playoffs. Who has the upper hand with a team that's battle-tested versus a team that's battle-worn?
Yeah, you know, the battle-tested, if all pieces were there, Ailish, really comes into play. But with Purdy being in there and it's not Garoppolo and a couple guys in the secondary not there and this, that, and everything, the battle tested is great. But Philadelphia able to, you know, marshal their resources a little bit better. Even down the stretch when the consternation kicked in where they lost a couple when they were trying to clinch the division, they still had such a cushion, they were fine. Okay? And as it turned out, when they clinched against the Giants, they had to play everyone. But they really didn't sweat too much. They were up 22-0 before the Giants made a so-called mini run at them. I think they're going to be okay. I don't think that's a problem. And going to Philadelphia is a whole different ball game in a game like this because that crowd, and there's an article I read, it might have been The Athletic this week, where I remember when the Vikings went there the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl, one of the coaches said in pregame, Harrison Smith, the all-pro safety for the Vikings, looked at the coach in pregame and went, wow, it was so electric already, and it had an effect on the ball game. We'll find out if it has that kind of effect on Purdy in San Francisco.
Can't wait. It's going to be an exciting Sunday, to say the least. We'll get you back on next week, tee up who's in the Super Bowl in a week after that. Thanks, Charles. Have a great week.
All right, thanks. I'll look forward to it. You guys go out, play a little shinny this afternoon for me, okay?
Oh, you bet. I love it. Thanks, Charles.
Take care.
Charles Davis, NFL and CBS analyst. I didn't get into shinny last night, but there's time, maybe Saturday.
Now, do you think he was listening about our shinny conversation, or was that based on his
the text he sent us?
A couple weeks ago, he was confirming that shinny was, in fact, I choose to believe he was just listening to us in the 6 a.m. hour.
I would love that. Okay, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Now, I was thinking about, we have a couple in there, but I'm going rogue.
Okay.
So this weekend, Eagles Niners, a hot ticket item, is actually going to be set to be the most expensive in NFL history.
Really?
As it for an NFC Championship game, the most expensive tickets for a conference championship ever.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, it's, you know, Philly.
Inflation,
pretty
baby.
Passionate fan base, but Ticketmaster, as we all know, scammers. Don't get into the whole.
Are they?
Well, Ticketmaster.
Putting Ticketmaster on blast?
Cool. Have you seen what goes on with concerts as of late?
I'm not a big concert guy.
Okay, well, there's like literally an uproar every time that something's put on Ticketmaster.
Okay.
We'll get into that another time. So the average cost to get into this game, $2,468.
Who has, like, disposable incomes? Like, what's going
the
on?
The average, which is 60%.
An average.
60% more than last year's NFC Championship game.
It's not like everyone's
game.
Wearing a suit in there. Like, it seems like...
It's outrageous.
People just save their money for this is it.
Well... Yeah, 60% more than last year's NFC Championship between the Rams and Niners, which was a $1,500.
Still.
The reason, though, that these have skyrocketed, though, is because within minutes of the tickets being released, they get sold out, and then people resell them on Ticketmaster, and you're going through third party or secondary market, I guess, and instead of the tickets being face value, they're thousands of dollars more. Mm-hmm. That's how it works for, you know, you saw what happened when you maybe didn't. Taylor Swift tickets, it crashed the internet, nobody can get them.
Kind of.
Every time that a ticket is released, a bot buys it and you're screwed. Anyway, it's going to be the most expensive ever for a conference championship game. So best
this
of luck.
Like, there's no solution for this. Like, this has been an issue forever. There's no way to get around, like, the old school. You just go up to the window, you buy a ticket, and you attend the game. Like, there's nothing we can do about it.
I don't think we can.
This is a money-making opportunity that you'll never be able to safeguard against. You know what I mean? Like, is there ever a solution for this? I don't think there'll ever will be.
Somebody will have a suggestion in the text line, because this is, like, I was looking at some tickets this summer, and it's just like, if you don't, even if you have the pre-sale code, it's insane.
They got to make sure, every time you're on Ticketmaster, you have to check all the boxes with a fire hydrant on it. And like, not a robot.
Yeah.
Like, how do robots get around that?
I can't even get it right.
And the robots know which pitcher has a fire hydrant on it.
Anyway, right now they're a little lower. I said the average was that, but right now you could get standing room only for $550.
I'm telling you, man, like that's... Go on a trip
Yikes.
Instead.
Yeah.
Watch it. Like, the broadcasts are too good. Go somewhere else.
Well, if that's the tickets for a championship game, think about the Super Bowl tickets.
I don't want to. How much most money you've ever spent on a game to go to a game?
I'm not going to put myself on blast.
Okay.
I've never spent.
Have you spent an uncomfortable. Have you ever been like, oh my God?
No, honestly, no.
No, I can't. I could never be able to rationalize it.
No.
I spent way too much money to go to a Chelsea game against Tottenham in the summer, and I was thinking about it for months.
Well, that's also like
was
different...
That worth
like, that's
it?
A one-off experience.
And that's why I justify it. It's like, I'm not in London every weekend.
I wouldn't drop $500 to go to a Leafs or Raptors or Bills game. Like, it's just like, you can go another time.
Yeah, I can't do it.
But if I was going to the Super Bowl or a championship game or an Olympic event or something, then maybe I would push the budget a bit. But this is... Anyway, best of luck, everybody who wants to go. All right, let's take a break because we have Bobby Ryan on the other side. We're going to talk about the Leafs-Sens Battle of Ontario tonight. Maybe Matt Murray gets the net. That's what we think. We'll see. And then Anthony Stewart at 8 a.m. before we do pick a side in the Wake and Rake. Send those in at 590-590. Let's take a break, and we'll be back with Bobby Ryan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan, the morning show, Sportsnet 590, the Fan. It's Friday, the Battle of Ontario tonight. Sens in town to face off against your Maple Leafs on Next Generation Night. A lot of kids in the stands to see these guys battle it out. Let's talk to Bobby Ryan, former NHL forward, three-time 30-goal scorer, host of Coming In Hot podcast. How's it going this morning, Bobby?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you guys doing?
We are doing swell. It's the end of the week. We got a big game tonight, but I want to ask you about last weekend in Owen Sound. I know you guys were out there enjoying Hockey Day in Canada, a couple Sportsnet talent as well. We got Anthony Stewart on afterwards. So I got to ask you what he was like in that alumni game, how you would grade his athleticism, because we will tell him at 8 o'clock.
You know what? He was a middle tier defenseman out there, but he was snapping it around pretty good. it was actually funny because I think anybody that played at that level, knows that there's a different level that we can go to. And it was fun to watch him actually open it up from back there a few times. He stepped up into the play, made some good passes and crispy ones. So, we all had a blast.
How'd you play?
Might have won MVP, but I'm not sure.
Oh, hell yeah. See, we're going to put you out there to do a little humble brag. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah,
I mean, pace was okay.
I played okay. I got by. Yeah, just okay.
One last one. We were talking to, I was listening to Sam McKee, one of our talent and producers, on Saturday. He was driving up to Owen Sound. He's from Owen Sound. And he shared a story that you actually stayed with your Billet family that weekend. Is that right?
I did, yes. Been about 10 years since I've been back, and always kept in touch, obviously,
awesome.
But didn't get a chance to spend time with them like I did on the weekend, so it was great.
That's really sweet.
Same things in the fridge and pantry that you remembered?
They read them. When I walked in, I was so confused. They redid everything a few years back in the immediate room there. So when I walked in, nothing looked the same. But I still rated everything correctly as well, yes.
Okay, second meeting between the Leafs and Senators tonight, and the first since the first week of the season. So these teams haven't sized each other up in a while. But, you know, it was a big offseason for the Ottawa Senators, getting Alex DeBrincat, getting Claude Giroux, winning the offseason, a lot of people like to say. But it, again, hasn't worked out maybe the way Senators and Senators fans has hoped. So what's gone wrong here? What hasn't worked for the Senators, and what's kind of holding them back from having success?
Well, they don't score at a terribly high rate, 5-on-5. That's a big part of it. They've got a great power play and special teams that can keep them in games. But I think that the only thing I would say is that the unrealistic expectations. I know that the media darling thing and this PR summer, or whatever you want to call it, but this was not a playoff team on paper. They looked better, and it looked like they've taken a step this year from where they were. But I think the expectations...
See ya.
Oh, I know that sound.
Oh, that's a disconnect.
I actually appreciate that sound because, you know,
it's super
sometimes
helpful.
It's just like what?
It's like the call has ended.
If you got that little, it's like something like
goodbye.
Something hitting the water or something, like the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah,
I don't even
that?
Know what it is. But
how do you like create
it's a
that
good
sound?
Thump.
It's a plunk. It's a plunk?
There's a plunking aspect to it, but it's like hits harder than a plunk.
It's very
like
helpful.
It's more abrupt.
That's
than
Skype,
a plunk.
Right?
I don't know.
I think it's Skype.
Either way, it helps.
It's very efficient. Now we know Bobby Ryan's going to reconnect in a second. A little bit of technological issues. But yeah, no, I heard Sam McKee drop that info about
so
him.
So I was desperate. I heard that too, and I was desperate for that information. Couldn't find it anywhere. It was our buddy Sam McKee. Anyway, we're just talking again about how you ended up at your Billet's house. Now that we have you reconnected, Bobby, you were talking about what was and wasn't working, and I guess, you know, secondary scoring being an issue, but maybe being a little bit too hopeful that, hey, we've got it all sorted out here after the summer of Pierre, but there's still holes in the roster.
Yeah, and they didn't address the defensive side of things. Always great to spend on offense, and offense is, I guess, what's sexy when you're looking at them and, you know, the roster, but not quite what they needed. They really needed to expand upon the blue line and did nothing to add to that.
So someone that I think a lot of people have a lot of positivity about is Tim Stützle with the way that he's played this season. I think it's easily said right now he's probably the best kid from that 2020 draft, even though he's third overall. What do you like best about his game? He seems extremely well-rounded, and he also seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, I guess what I like about him is just his overall skill. His skill set's incredible. He's one of the better guys in the league that I've seen on his edges. And the way that he makes high-profile moves at top speed, and he's able to kind of comfortably slide in and around things. So, love his shot. You know, I don't know the player from Adam, obviously, but yeah, he's got the tools to really, really be a very, very good player in this league for a long time.
What's like the general attitude feeling in the market? Like, I understand it would be frustration, but also understanding that this is a process and a lot of good things to be hopeful about, and maybe the realization that, hey, we're still working towards it here. There's a lot of exciting prospects still coming up in the system. Like, how are fans digesting and outwardly expressing this season?
Well, I think there's a little anger, and there's some hurt for the fans. Like, again, that, you know, nobody put the right expectations on the Senators but the fans, and you know, I think that they were ready to take a major step forward and coming out of this, you know, the rebuild, and to have it be declared done and then be a bottom team again is very frustrating for the fan base. But my initial sense is that there's also a lot to be positive about. Tim Stützle took a big year this year. Brady got another year as a captain under his belt, going through some stuff. Giroux came in and helped solidify some things. And you got some trade pieces if you want to get better with Brincat and other guys that you could be looking to move here in the next month or so. So a lot of positive things to be talked about for the Sens.
So tonight is that Battle of Ontario. The crowd certainly loves it when these two face off wherever, if it's a home game in Toronto or seemingly a home game for the Leafs again in Ottawa. Sorry about that, but he knows. But what's the Battle of Ontario like when you're a part of it? I mean, right now I think we can all attest it's been a little bit less prolific as of late, but maybe it's on its way back. And what it meant like to be a part of that?
Yeah, there is no way around. I mean, it was a great rivalry to be part of. Just two teams that hate each other. Honestly, it's not, it was fun. I got to go up against some really good players in the series. You got to watch Matthews make his debut and score four. I think I just dashed three that game just watching him tuck them home. So that was fun. But it was always a good barn. It was always a good atmosphere. You just knew what you were going to get, whether it was there or at home. And very fortunate that I got to play in that for 7 years.
So one season of overlap with Brady Tkachuk. So you know a little bit about him, but maybe not the extent of what she's grown as a leader now, but like, how much does Brady kind of stoke the fire and maybe highlight the importance, you think, of a Battle of Ontario? Like, he seems like a for-the-moment guy, and I feel like, he's a really quality leader and a great young player in this league. But it feels like the Battle of Ontario would get his juices flowing a little bit more as well. Like, do you think that's the type of player that, has a sense for the moment and maybe has these guys ready for maybe not just any other game, not one of 82, but one against your provincial rivals?
Yeah. He's got a way about dragging guys into the fight with him. I know the coach has said that about him before. And he is. You nailed it. He was at 18 years old. You could see he was going to be a captain and a leader and guy that comes to the rink every day. And like you said, stokes the fire and is ready to go. So I think he's, I think he's just learning, number one, how to be a captain and what to be for his guys. And I think that you'll see it tonight when he brings that attitude, because he doesn't take nights off to begin with. And then you throw in a little extra for this one, it's going to be he's a fun watch on these nights.
What do you think of those Maple Leafs? I mean, they seem to be just chugging along, headed to the playoffs, probably against Tampa, then probably against Boston Bruins, who will be a very tough match, a tough one to advance through. This year, they've had a lot of great individual success as well. Mitch Marner with that incredible point streak. We've seen the goaltending kind of shore up here with Ilya Samsonov. You think they're as legit as most Leaf fans really want them to be?
You're gonna put me on the spot, eh? I think that they're a much improved team from where they were last year. I think that they're also not a great playoff team. But it's a different game and it's a different element once you get into the playoffs. So, the road looking like it's already set for them. Do they lose again in seven? And if they lose to Tampa, does the whole roster change? I don't think that's got to be what it needs to be, but they got to find a way to get out of the first round for people to become believers. I don't want to tell you this, but I love watching them play.
That's on record officially. I want to ask you about two of your former teammates. I guess I've already asked you about one, but Erik Karlsson's like the most intriguing player dangling in the wind potentially right now. A former teammate of yours, a guy who was at the height of the league when you were teammates with him. What do you want to see? Like, do you want him to move on? Do you want him to play on another team? Do you want him playing in meaningful games, or does that really matter? Like, how much are you pulling for him to maybe be in a position where he can do what's most important to him, as he said, which is just to win hockey games?
Yeah, I think I would like to see him move. Number one, to get him to a place where he's playing meaningful games and get him to a place where he's chasing the cup. I think, I played with him in a very long playoff run. It was a lot of fun to watch. Get away from things for a few years. His game looks back to where it was. Well, it is. I mean, it doesn't look it. It is. So it would be nice to go see him chase one down. I would be, very supportive of him.
Are you surprised that it looks like the Ottawa Senators, Erik Karlsson, all of a sudden?
No, I think it was always there. I think he had a bad injury that took some time to get back from, and probably didn't heal the way you wanted to for a period of time, and it weighed on him and his game changed because of it. But time and separation, and all of a sudden he's back. Fun to watch.
And that other player I want to ask you about, or that other teammate, is Craig Anderson, who's still playing hockey. After a couple of years ago, it seemed like he was retiring, ready to leave the game. This guy made his debut the fall Owen Power was born, and now they're teammates and winning hockey games together. And he's part of like a three-headed monster there in goal for the Buffalo Sabres. But I wonder, do you miss a start for him? Because, like, it's not that there are only a few left. There might only be a few left for him, but still playing at a high level, playing for a team that's really, really exciting. Like, how much does it pique your interest when Craig Anderson's in net?
Todd, he's been one of my closest friends in the league for a while, and just had dinner with him last week, actually, and I said, what are you doing? Let the kids play and move on. But he's got a great setup where he is. He loves Buffalo. He loves the young guys that are playing in front of him. So yeah, he's happy. And you know, I posted something the other day about his 700th game. It's just incredible what he's doing. And you know, when you don't go down to stop a puck and you play like Billy Ranford, I guess it's easy to play for a long time.
We got an intriguing storyline tonight and also Sunday with two netminders going up against their former teams. I wonder for you, or, you know, personally, but also through teammates, how much you get up for a game where you're playing against a former team, maybe, you know, especially for a netminder, because you're basically shutting the door down, but you're playing against your old team. You have a big moment to prove it. How much does that elevate, or could it also hinder your performance?
Not a ton. I, if I'm being completely honest, I think, like you just mentioned, it's different for goalies. And they, you know, they feel differently towards it, but it, you know, I would go back to Anaheim for the first one and get it out of the way. And other than that, it was just every other night or a game like any other night. So you kind of get away from that. And then, you know, the storylines are bigger than the players feel about it.
Is there a grudge still in the market with Ottawa and Matt Murray?
So I never understood that. Matt Murray didn't do anything but come in and sign a contract and try, you know? So I think there is, a little bit. I just don't understand it. He, you know, obviously did not live up to the billing and the contract, and obviously, you know, that happens. But I was always a fan of the person and the way that he handled things on his way out, and the way that he's handled things after.
So when you look around the league now, Bobby, what player, what team, what excites you about the game when you're sitting down and you're flipping channels? Like, who do you stop and watch? Who's number one on the watchability rankings? Like, when you're watching hockey, when you want to be entertained, what team, what player are you going to?
Man, is that hard? That's a loaded question. I would say that I'm a real big fan of the guys out west in Edmonton, just from, you know, that standpoint. You know that you're going to see some goals every night that they get in. And right now, just I've been a big fan lately of Boston. The style, the way that they're playing, the way that they're, you know, some of their older guys that are over, you know, north of 30 are taking control of games. Like watching that team, and a real big fan of Jim Montgomery as a person. So that's probably where I'm going to veer towards the most, is the Bruins.
And lastly, Bobby, I just wanted to give you the floor and maybe share a word on Bob Jones, Senators assistant coach, had been diagnosed, but it was announced this week that he was diagnosed with ALS. Just, you know, a word on him and what he means to the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, I had Jonesy for a year and haven't reached out. I wanted things to die down for him a little bit here and, like, give him a chance to breathe after all of it. So looking forward to connecting with him. But he's always checked in on me, you know, after the fact that I played for him, and just a really, really good person. Very much a fan of the game. He loves the way, you know, he just loves to be on the ice. He loves to be on the guys, and it's a shame. It's tragic, and just hoping the best for him, you know, just hoping the best and looking forward to reaching out and connecting with him.
Yep. The whole hockey world, of course, is behind Bob Jones, Senators assistant coach, who's diagnosed with ALS. Bobby, this was really fun catching up. Hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Maybe. Thanks, Bobby. That was Bobby Ryan, former NHL forward, 3-time 30 goal scorer.
MVP of the Hockey Day in Canada.
There you go.
Match on
Snap it
Friday
around.
Or Saturday, whenever that one was.
Also co-host of the Coming in Hot podcast. Seems like a lot of those guys with the Senators are doing some local media.
I love that.
A lot
of
guys in Ottawa making the transition.
It's an opportunity. You want to get some new voices in there, some voices that were a part of that organization. I think that's going to help a lot with fan base getting fired up for their team.
Did you get enough of a scouting report on Stewie as you hoped for there?
I think we'll have to try to unpack a little bit more with Stewie.
Stewie's always on the ice. He's the opposite of you, actually. He's always out there.
Yeah, guy's a busy guy.
Working with the youth, coaching. Yeah. You just hung him up.
He continues to work on his game.
Skates are somewhere rusting out.
Yeah. I told Justin this before the show.
I didn't want to say it.
Well, it's not I'll just say it, Justin.
Okay, I was giving you the opportunity.
Last night I didn't go play shinny, and I mentioned to Justin that currently my hockey bag is in my bathtub, and he thought that was the most outrageous thing that's ever come out of my mouth.
Hold on. It's outrageous for you because you are like...
the beacon of cleanliness,
You
yes.
like keeping things clean. You don't like clutter. At least I don't think you do.
No.
So I feel like it would torment you. That
it does.
And it's kind of symbolic, too, because you haven't been on the ice, and the bag is just sitting there annoying you.
It really used to be tough.
The light of your life. It used to be your thing. This hockey bag is just a world of opportunity when it opens up. Now it's sitting... in your bathtub, tormenting you. I can't believe it.
And just for some context, I have a shower and a bathtub, right. I'm not having to move it every time I need to go to the shower.
Still.
Okay, everybody. Second of all, it needs to be moved to my brother's storage locker, and he's listening, so let's go, Jordan. I'm waiting for you to assist me in this process.
But I'm also concerned with that because if it goes to your brother's house, you're not going to use it.
I don't have anywhere else to put it is the problem. It's not going to fit in under a bed or in a closet.
Will you keep your skates with you? Skates,
yes.
Gloves, sticks.
Yeah, I'll have little duffel bag ready for when I go play shinny, but the hockey bag right now has nowhere to go. You know Toronto, people that are listening.
I'm sad.
I don't have
this.
A storage locker at this new place I live at, so currently it's in the tub, okay? I don't love it. I'm not proud of this thing, but and every day when I go in there, I'm like, ugh.
It says something about your cleanliness that the bag can be in your tub and not be actively like an issue, like smell.
Well, the problem is, or
mildew, mold.
I haven't worn the gear in getting close to a year.
My hockey bag cannot be indoors.
Well, but you play all the time, so that's different. Like if I was playing, that thing would not be in my bathroom. But it's dry. It has probably dust in it, and it's just. Quietly sits there, but it bugged you this morning.
Sad state of affairs. It does. And it doesn't even bug me. Like, your part of it doesn't bug me. The fact that Ailish Forfar is not playing hockey regularly bugs me.
You want to look at my schedule?
Oh, I know about your schedule.
I would love to play hockey, but it's not in the cards right now, Justin.
Okay.
But I do get reminded every day that I see my hockey bag there. So, Jordan, let's get it in the storage locker. Help me out, buddy.
Figure this out, pal.
So I can take a bath one day. Okay. Great. Now everybody knows that story.
I didn't say it.
No, yeah, yeah.
I allowed you to bring it up.
I brought it up. I saw it in your eyes, though.
You didn't have to go there.
All right. The wake and rake after Anthony Stewart. We had an embarrassing evening. The NHL was off the rails last night. No excuses, but also some excuses. Some weird results, including the two that we selected.
I mean,
you got to lose sometimes.
I can't make an excuse. I just have to eat it. Mm-hmm. Four unanswered for the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, my Minnesota Wild almost got it, and then they had to push it to overtime. That game was crazy, though. Yeah, so we didn't get it, but Neil's in the text line. Neil's pick hit last night. Hey, Julius Randle, no longer Hall of Famer. That's another miss for him.
He's still a Hall of Famer. We're not going to go to him every time.
Yeah.
The market's adjusted.
Well, we got Sens at the Maple Leafs tonight. You can choose from that. You got Raptors on the road against the Golden State Warriors. Juliana's already in the text line. Big night for her. Anthony Stewart on the other side of the break on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.